Hello all, thank you for the nice introduction. The only problem with the introduction is I think I now have to remove a few slides. That was a little longer than I expected, but nice to fill you in on some of that background. My goal today is to keep this pretty informal. Once I saw the size of the room, I knew that might be possible. So if, as I'm going along, people are either puzzled or outraged by something I say, feel free to wave and we can talk about a point before I proceed. And if I don't get through all the slides, that's okay. So, but I have about just under an hour's worth of slides if everything goes smoothly, I think. I was asked to talk about this intersection between public health and informatics, and that naturally, of course, at the FIN meeting, and in light of my new position at the American Medical Informatics Association, makes it logical for me to talk about AMIA and FIN as well. This is the first time I've been at a FIN meeting, and it's clearly very relevant to the kind of things I think about and worry about every day, just based on the little time I've been here already. Here's what I thought I'd do. First, my observation is that a lot of people who use the word informatics aren't really sure that they're using it with the same intent and meaning and understanding that others do, and some kind of agreement about what we mean by biomedical informatics, health informatics, public health informatics, and the like seems like a logical starting point. And so I do want to start with some definitions. Admittedly, the ones that I've come to embrace after being in this field for many years, I'm not sure they're identical to what everybody else would say. That's one of the joys of a young field, is that everybody has a slightly different view of the elephant, as they say. But let me talk about not only the definitions, but something about what the science base is here, because this is an academic discipline with departments and academic units increasingly appearing in medical schools and universities and nursing schools and others. And as that happens, presumably they had to convince their parent institutions that this was a field that had its real separate academic identity. And we'll say a little bit about some of the workforce issues that have arisen and that are becoming increasingly evident now that we have so much attention on this field in general and in public health informatics in particular. Then I want to give you some background on AMIA. Now, if everybody in this audience is already an AMIA member, that's a little redundant, but I'm assuming that not everybody here is intimately familiar with AMIA. Is that safe to assume? Okay. So that's the American Medical Informatics Association, and I'll say a little bit about it and how it has related to public health, and in particular the current status of some of its programs. I want to talk about the relationship with CDC and FIN that AMIA has had most recently. And then, if there's time, close with a couple of comments about the current, what I'm referring to here is the policy and funding juggernaut, which suddenly has taken off this year. And for those of us who've been in the field for any length of time, it's rather mind-boggling to see what's happening today compared to the days when many of us got started in this field and had trouble getting very much attention at all, and now suddenly you wonder if you're not getting a little bit too much of a good thing. So let's start with those definitions, okay? Start with a little bit of history here. The field kind of started in the 1960s as a separate identifiable field, because that's when the first NIH study section was formed to review grants related to computers in medicine. They were essentially all clinical. They had to do with building systems, mostly in hospitals. But there was a study section set up of people that were capable of reviewing those kind of grants. They just called it the Computers in Medicine Study Section. That's what they called it. Now, as the field evolved, there was really no consistency in what to call it. Many people called it simply computer applications in medical care. In fact, the first big meeting in this field was known as the Symposium on Computer Applications in Medical Care, SCAMC, and was pronounced SCAMCY. And if you've heard of SCAMCY meetings, that's the predecessor of the current AMIA meetings that existed for many years. The problem with that is it makes it sound, A, like it's all about computers, and B, that it makes it sound like it's all about applications. And frankly, the field is about, that would be overly constraining as a description of the field. Some people call it medical information sciences. Then it got, you heard that was the actual name we used for my degree, but it ended up also confusing people because of assumption it had something to do with library science and libraries because of the connection of information sciences with the library field. Medical computer science had the same problem as computer applications in medicine in emphasizing computer science when there's a lot more to this field, as I'll be describing, than just computation. So finally, in the 1980s, we began to see the emergence of a new word to describe this field that seemed to catch on. It was derived from the French word, actually, for computer science in France, informatique. If you go to a school in France and they have a computer science department, the informatique is what's used to describe the field. Because it emphasized information and information processing, which is kind of at the key of this at the core of this field, that seemed very attractive to people. And so they began to call the field medical informatics. Interestingly, although informatics has stuck, the medical has given way to biomedical in about the last 15 years. And the reason is quite simple. It really is the Human Genome Project, the incredible growth and awareness in the 1990s that you couldn't do modern biology without computers and without informatics methodologies. And so medical, which sounded a little bit too clinical to the bio world, by moving it to biomedical informatics, we found that people embraced it regardless of whether they worked in the biological sciences or in the clinical or public health arenas. So what's the definition? Definition we've used, although there are many others out there, is this one. And we came up with this in the late 1980s, and I must admit today I might even try to make it sound less computational because it has some terms in it that sound a little bit like computer terms. The gist of this is that it doesn't mention computers. It has to do with the substance of something that happens in biomedicine, which is our ability to reason and make good decisions based upon the knowledge that we have, the information that becomes available about something. And so this notion that decision-making is important and that this is the field about biomedical data, information, and knowledge and its manipulation and appropriate use is kind of central to what the discipline is meant to be about. By this definition, in fact, informatics has existed since Hippocrates. It's always been part of medicine, but it never got identified until, as I said, the 1960s as kind of an emerging different discipline. That you could teach, for example, until the introduction of computing and communications and networking. So it touches really on all the basic biomedical sciences and the applied sciences as well, and it's inherently closely tied to computing and communications. As is true of any definition in a few sentences, however, we found that you need a little bit more detail before you really feel you've got a handle on the field and what it's about. Now, recently, there was an article in the Journal of the American Medical Informatics Association by Chuck Friedman, who's currently at ONC, but wrote this paper before he went to ONC, in which he introduced what he calls his fundamental theorem of biomedical informatics. So there's a little short two-page paper, and it can be captured in a couple of simple pictures that I think give people insight into the field. This is what many people think the field is about. Computers, somehow or another, replacing human beings because they're better at certain things than human beings are. And he said, and he's correct in saying this, that is not what this field is about. And there are very few people in this field who would even begin to think that that was a reasonable goal or the purpose of informatics. Instead, he said, this is the key point, that human beings augmented by computational methods and information management methodologies can do a better job than they can do without them if you build the systems appropriately and you worry adequately about all those issues of the interface between a human being and technology. So the implication, therefore, is this can't just be about computers and getting computers to do things. It's about people and how people reason, interact with, get mental models of things, human-computer interaction, human interface issues, the psychology and the cultural realities of clinical and medical environments. These are all important parts of allowing that second part of this so-called theorem to actually be acted on. So what I found useful, I see Greg Cooper in the audience, and he will remember this from some 20 some odd years ago, I think, is for many years I said, look, we need a name for the basic science of this field, the core discipline. And today we're calling that biomedical informatics. This is the set of the methods and the techniques and the theories that are evolving over time. This is where the scientists in the field try to make contributions, new methods, new techniques, new theories. But unlike some pure sciences that exist kind of in the ether, this is a field totally connected to the applied world that motivates the work. So there's a lot of applied research in this field as well. And for a long time, the main area for the applied work was in the field of clinical informatics. So I use clinical informatics to describe. Some people would say that's medical informatics. I don't use the phrase medical informatics at all anymore, except for the name of the organization that I'm president of right now. Because actually, you know, and I think that's a problem. The medical informatics phrase is definitely falling out of favor as the descriptor, okay? So biomedical informatics is the field. Clinical informatics is one area of application. And many people specialize in clinical informatics. That's what interests them. And so nursing informatics falls in that category, the dental applications, all of clinical medicine, even veterinary informatics is kind of clinical informatics, whole organism informatics, if you will. Right? Now the other big and rapidly growing area, then there's imaging informatics, which has been an important part of the field for a long time. It's a little bit separate. It's the area that's kind of jointly owned with bioengineering, because there's a lot of image processing work and image management work that goes on outside of informatics. So we've found that there's a component of the imaging world in which informatics has a large role to play, and other parts are much more like traditional engineering disciplines. This area has sometimes been called structural informatics. The University of Washington group has in particular been using that name to describe this work in that area. It's not just radiology, although obviously radiologic images are very important in biomedicine, but it's other image-oriented parts of the biomedical arena. So for example, pathology smears, hematology smears, dermatology photographs. These are structural, they're organ and tissue-oriented rather than whole body-oriented in general. And then the emergence in the 90s of the field that has become known as bioinformatics, the application of biomedical informatics methods and techniques in the areas of molecular biology, genomics, proteomics, the basic science areas of medicine, if you will, and increasingly important, especially at a meeting like this, public health informatics. Okay. So those are the four major categories in the field. So one lesson for everybody to walk out of here remembering is biomedical informatics and bioinformatics are not synonyms. Okay. And calling the entire field bioinformatics is as objectionable to the people that are in the clinical informatics world as calling the whole field medical informatics is to people that do biological applications. So biomedical is the overarching discipline. Bioinformatics is one area of application. Now, if I scrunch this up a little bit, I'll make what should be clear by now, and that is that there's a whole spectrum of application areas that essentially cover the entire biomedical world, from molecular biology and cellular processes to tissues and organ systems for imaging informatics to individuals, patients usually, or healthy individuals trying to stay so, and then populations in society in public health informatics, right? And I think you can see, a meeting like this makes it very clear that it is very hard to draw a line between clinical informatics and public health informatics. These two are highly interrelated fields. And although clinical informatics was kind of where the field started, the public health implications became clear relatively early on, actually. So people that work in either clinical or public health areas often just call what they do health informatics, which captures both the clinical and the public health and population-oriented elements of this. Okay? So I would urge you to think of health informatics as a name that captures both public and clinical informatics, public health and clinical informatics, especially on the applied side. Okay? So that means that I need to emphasize another thing, which is health informatics is not the same as biomedical informatics. Right? Health informatics is applied clinical and public health informatics. Biomedical informatics is the core discipline. Now, anytime you have four little categories, people say you're doing too much siloing and so forth, and they're right. There are just too many ways in which these four categories interact with one another. I already mentioned one, clinical and public health, but there are other examples, and I'll just show you that I do realize that with a couple of these examples. For example, there is clearly a merging of bioinformatics and imaging informatics in the whole burgeoning area of biomolecular imaging, which is a hot area of research and activity. Bioinformatics and clinical informatics come together as we begin to try to understand how the genetic makeup of individuals affects the way you treat, diagnose, and manage them. And so pharmacogenomics, for example, which is the combination of data from both genotypic and phenotypic data sets that allow you to begin to understand how someone's genetic makeup can help predict how they will respond to one of the various agents you might choose to treat them with. That's this whole area becoming known as pharmacogenomics. You clearly need both kinds of data. You need to reason at both the individual and the molecular level. And in the last year or two, we've seen this explosion of interest in biomedical informatics cores being created as part of the CTSA programs, the Clinical Translational Science Awards from NIH, where in fact it has become clear that because of the nature of those awards, which are trying to get bedside to community, to established caregivers, and to shorten the length of time it takes for new science to make it out into routine practice, that biomedical informatics plays an important role across the entire spectrum in the CTSAs, and the core biomedical informatics programs tend to have all four of these areas represented. Maybe not imaging, but the other three for sure. Now, there are other ways of thinking about this, and just to show you another one, this is the way that the Vanderbilt program has tended to describe this field. They talk about the biological sciences, the basic sciences that exist in a typical life science university, medical school, for example, genetics, structural biology, neuroscience, and the other basic sciences, overlapping with the clinical sciences and public health and health services research. And that overlap is where a lot of the translational research goes on, bringing that basic science work into the clinical world. Biomedical informatics also overlaps. So it has a section of it which is translational science, the bottom half of that middle oval. But it has bioinformatics and health informatics also represented in the Venn diagram. Okay. It's another way of thinking about it. It's basically the same idea. Let me emphasize that when you really think about it, decision-making and support for good decisions lies at the core of essentially everything this field is about. You think of any application you want in the informatics area, and it's probably trying to help someone make better decisions. So for example, Medline. We might not normally call Medline a decision support system, but it is, right? That's the only reason you use it, is to get information that will allow you to make a better decision about something. The field is inherently aimed at enhancing the quality of decisions people make, and it's just as true in the public health arena. That's why you do it. You're trying to make good decisions. And because decisions are so important and their quality are so important, this is where many of the legal and ethical issues arise in the field, is because of the decision making that's at its heart, especially when patient well-being is involved and their privacy and the security of their data. So what do I mean when I say basic research in biomedical informatics? A lot of people say, what is that? I mean, I understand what it is if you're trying to discover a new gene or you're working on some new phenomenon in physiology, but I don't get what the basic research concept is in biomedical informatics. So all of the projects that people work on in our field are pretty much in response to some real-world problem that they have identified in one of those four large areas of application. Okay? There's this problem, it's got to get solved, informatics could play a role, and then sometimes what you discover is the informatics methods that you have available to you are not adequate for solving that problem effectively. In fact, that often happens. And when it does, you have to develop new methods. And when you do, you're doing basic research in informatics. So the notion here is that basic science in this field is offering methodological innovation and then describing it in a way that others can use it. It becomes part of the scientific base of the field. It generalizes. The program itself that someone might write is not the contribution as much as to the basic science, as much as that methodologic innovation. And it means that people have to understand how their ideas generalize and contribute to others, because I can tell you that it's extremely hard for you to learn lessons from a description of someone's program that you can then apply to another program. But you can learn methods that are well described and figure out, maybe with the help of the author, how to apply it to a similar problem in some other area. So part of our challenge is to teach our students to understand that distinction and to know when they're writing a scientific paper as opposed to a descriptive paper. The field is inherently interdisciplinary. There's no such thing as a pure informatics project. You're always working with somebody from some other domain who needs your help. Or you also are from that other domain and you are trying to solve a problem that you see the need for a solution to. So biomedical informatics is providing bridging expertise between the more technical computer science and other fields and the practitioners. Now I'd like to suggest there's a cycle that we could have described as many as 30 or 40 years ago, but is it becoming increasingly feasible for us to imagine how to actually accomplish this cycle? Because it was kind of a pipe dream in 1970 when I think I probably could have drawn this same picture. But we're getting so much closer. You think about that as we go through it. Let me tell you what the cycle is that I think it underlies a tremendous amount on the clinical end of the spectrum of our field. We have providers caring for patients and ultimately helping them do their job as well as possible in as safe a way as possible is what we're all about, right? And there has been a view for some time that the role of electronic health records in facilitating that process was obvious, because we could see, anybody could see, any practitioner such as myself could see that the paper-based world I was trying to care for patients in was heavily flawed in terms of the information management challenges that I faced. And I knew that in 1969. Okay. It's not a new discovery. So people were beginning to say, you know, how does other segments of society handle things like this? They use information processing methodologies. We're suddenly, you know, we got computers by 1970, handling all your phone bills and credit card bills and things like that. Why weren't we figuring out how to do better in medicine with that? And of course, the initial goal of it all was, then we can use them the next time we see the patient. And our colleagues can use them so that they know what we did the last time that we saw the patient when they're seeing the patient in a different context. And I don't think we ever coined the phrase at the time, but clearly in part of the discussion has always been, how can we make sure that if you do that, you do it in a way so that the use is meaningful? that really is making a difference. Anybody Google that phrase recently?
It's quite an exercise.
You should try it. This phrase, meaningful use, has taken on a life of its own this year for reasons we can talk about later, but I think most of you are fully familiar with the reason.
One could argue that although just having
patient records online, being able to share them to do team care of patients more effectively, was in and of itself a great justification for exploring the notions of electronic health records, I think from the very beginning we realized there's another tremendous advantage to doing this. And it really has to do with feeding back into the societal effort to try to enhance what we know and thereby the quality of care that we give long term. So hooking up our electronic health records so that they contribute directly to regional and national registries, that the data are available at least in a retrospective way to biomedical research, but also electronic health records facilitating more formal randomized controlled trials of the like that we need in the clinical research world in order to really understand what works and what doesn't. Now,
out of the world of registries and
public health data analysis and the like, plus the biomedical research world, we come to understand the standards for prevention and treatment that evolve over time. And of course, they're very different today than they were even 10 years ago in many diseases.
And then our challenge always is, all right,
how do we get people to take this into account in the way in which they actually make decisions and treat patients? And there have been many methods that have been tried. Developing formal protocols or guidelines, educational materials, published papers in the journals. And people do their very best to be up to date on all this stuff, and it is really hard. There's so much of it, right? Any practitioners here know. And it's worse all the time. So we can only close this cycle, close the loop, if you will, if we do think about how to deliver what we know in an effective way back to the physicians and the other healthcare workers when they care for patients. And the electronic health record and order entry systems and the like become the mechanism for actually delivering the decision support, the most recent information. By the way, I'm not saying decision making. It's not that the computer decides what you're going to do. It's that it provides you with the state-of-the-art information, which you can then integrate with other things you know about your patient to decide if it makes the most sense. So that's the cycle. And today, with the internet and some standards evolving and the like, we have a much better idea of how this can actually come to pass over time. But we're still nowhere close to doing it, right? So what's been happening in the last 20 years? Well, biomedical informatics training programs have taken off. There are now National Library of Medicine supported programs in graduate training in the field and fellowships at several universities. There are about 20 currently supported. The current round of applications started, I believe, in 1984. Okay, so now we've now got a full 25 years of NLM supported training grants under the current model. There actually had been some training from NLM even before that. We've seen broadening of the training programs to include public health and public health informatics and bioinformatics, which used to not be really on the minds of people particularly, but now those are full-fledged parts of these training programs. We've seen the creation of professional societies such as AMIA, degree programs, quality scientific meetings, journals, and other indicators of a maturing discipline. And there's been a clear broadening of the range of applications of the what goes on in this field, but there's always tension between whether you're doing service or whether you're doing research and education in the academic units. Okay? I sensed some of that same tension within CDC when I heard some of the talks this morning. So Ruth mentioned that I was physician. I am a physician as well as an informatician. And so for years, I've worked in academic centers where I have cared for patients for a small portion of my time, and I've done biomedical informatics research and education for the rest. My clinical practice was always in general internal medicine, both inpatient and outpatient. And the problems that I experienced as an intern or resident and medical student when I was getting into this field continued for years after, no matter what I knew about informatics, right? And so I had to introspect when I would go back to my laboratory after a day in the clinic and say, I know so much about what we could be doing. Why am I living this life where it's clearly not happening, even in my own institution? Of course, the problems are bigger than any single individual, no matter how much vision you might have or insight about the nature of the problem, right? And so I've thought a lot about, why is this so hard? Why has it taken so long? And it partly may just be that I'm impatient, you know? But the reasons are valid and real and understandable. They have to do with culture. They have to do with the inability definitively to make the business case, although there are actually quite a few articles that are making the business case, at least in limited arenas, very effectively. But the generalization that this is definitely going to save you money is a very hard one to sell, especially when administrators say, oh, you can do that at the Brigham, but we're different from the Brigham. I'm not sure that would work here. That's not an uncommon kind of reaction to hear. And then the cultural issue is this notion, and I bet you in the public health world you run into this too, this sort of sense that that the users just don't get it and they're fighting it and they don't realize this could be really helpful to them. And I think that's a little flippant to think that that's the whole nature of the problem. It's much more complicated than that. We have learned that the introduction of new technologies have to be thoughtful and they have to be sensitive to the cognitive and the fiscal and the workflow issues that dominate your ability as a health worker to react positively to a new technology. It's not just sort of visceral negative reactions. It's that people aren't convinced. They don't see the value right off the bat, quite often. And there's another thing, they're busy. There's never been so much regulatory hassles in practice and in the world of medical care, and people are just afraid of yet another thing that's going to overload them. And we want to all avoid feeling overloaded, right? So what's started to change?
Why are we talking about those things
in the past? Well, I've thought a lot about that, and I think that there are a variety of things we can point to. Part of it is just time, but another is this incredibly important series of reports from the Institute of Medicine. Okay, the first one came out in 2000 to Eris Human. You've all heard about it, I'm sure. The sister or subsequent report was only a year later, crossing the quality chasm. They all have to do about patient safety, errors, why errors occur. The third one was called Patient Safety, a New Standard for Care. It came out in 2004. And every one of the three reports talks extensively about the role of informatics and computational tools in trying to address some of the reasons for the noted errors that occur and that are an affront to patient safety.
For example, in the third report,
the committee believes that establishing an information technology infrastructure, the so-called NHII as it was called in those days,
should be the highest priority for all healthcare stakeholders.
Now, this is in a report on patient safety. It wasn't an informatics report. Well, these reports really did start to have an impact. They're part of what I think started to change.
So I've written about this. If you're interested, you could look up this paper. It came out in 2005. Strategic Action in Health Information Technology, Why the Obvious Has Taken So Long.
And I tried to argue to a kind of closing comment that finally the United States seems to be poised to achieve what we have sought and anticipated for at least three decades. So a lot has happened since 2005, right? Now, if you hear people talk about what's going on today, they tend to call it HIT. Right? So what exactly is HIT as compared to biomedical informatics? Are they the same? Are these, one of them is the new term de rigueur, and BMI is out of date? And I would say, no, you got it wrong. Let's think about it. What have I said about BMI? Biomedical informatics is basically research, development, training, new idea generation, thought leadership, that kind of stuff. Mostly in academic settings, but also in research institutes and to a certain extent in R&D labs within companies. They all, as I described, these interdisciplinary projects often interact with the biomedical research community, either on the basic science or the clinical research side. But I talked about the service aspects of this field, and there are many BMI units where they spend a significant amount of their time working on applied projects, usually in their hospital, in the academic medical centers. So they build the clinical systems that are used in the hospital, or they manage at least the most clinical part of the information infrastructure that's in use in their hospitals, or their outpatient clinics. And we have some great examples of academically created information systems and medical record systems that have been used very successfully in large academic medical centers. In a few cases, clinical systems companies have acquired software from university programs and have turned them into, shall we call, them industrial strength generalizable products that can then be sold on the marketplace. In fact, recently, that's where most of the academic medical centers are getting their information systems. So they are now using the BMI units more to help in the selection and the implementation process, but they're dealing more with vendors than in the days when there was an awful lot of build your own system work going on. And of course, the clinical system companies also sell their products outside of academia to other hospitals, community hospitals, to health systems, to small practices, multi-specialty groups, to the healthcare industry in general, right? So I have been describing for you this first left-hand side of the screen as BMI, and I would argue that everything on the right-hand side of the screen is HIT. It's the applied clinically oriented use of concepts that originally arose in the informatics world and are now ready for prime time in the real world. Okay. Now that doesn't mean there's no relationship between BMI and HIT. In fact, there's vibrant interaction, and there are many people that work in the HIT world who are very involved in BMI and in AMIA as a result. So many of the people that now work in the HIT world originally got trained in the BMI world. Right? That means the BMI world has to know how to train people for the HIT world. It's one of the places where your product, your educational product, ends up. And the ideas, like from AMIA meetings or from the journals, that are where papers appear from people in the BMI community. And sometimes software, as I mentioned, that actually gets acquired and used in that community, and the methods that get created and then become generalizable and applied in the world. So I view these as highly interactive activities, but not to be confused. There's the academic world of biomedical informatics, and there's the much more applied health information technology world, which is where the good work of many years on the BMI side finally sees itself coming to fruition. So there are people who identify themselves with one of these communities more than another, and if you can identify yourself primarily with biomedical informatics, you tend to be a member of AMIA or involved with AMIA, and if you are primarily on the HIT side, we've seen that that's where this large HIMSS organization often has people join them. But there are a lot of people who kind of emanated from BMI and are now working in HIT, but they still like going back to and hearing talks about BMI topics and projects. And so there are a lot of people that go to both of these meetings and are members of both of these organizations. So I view them as very complementary but serving different needs. The HIMSS world is much more closely tied to the vendors than the AMIA world is, for example. Now, there is an international organization like AMIA, the International Medical Informatics Association, which has members that are the national organizations, okay, not individuals, but the national organizations are members of IMEA. IMEA, I've purposely drawn this way to show that although it really is kind of a BMI organization, it has, especially in certain countries, representatives that are much more on the HIT side. So it bridges it in a way that in the U.S. we don't see quite the same amount of bridging. So there's a key limitation as we seek to bring informatics into clinical care, and you're all familiar with this, I suspect, and that is there are not enough people who are really trained at the interface among the computer information and communication sciences and the biomedical and health sciences. It's been recognized for a long time. The NLM has done what it can to try to address that. But with Walmart recently announcing that they're going to sell office systems into private offices, who's going to do it for them? Who are the people they're going to hire? Computer science graduates of undergraduate programs may know a lot about technology, but they don't know about the culture and the workflow and the realities of medical practice or the environment in which these systems are going to get installed, right? They need informatics people to install those systems. So what are the responses that we've seen to this educational imperative? Well, one is the degree programs that I described in biomedical informatics, and everyone recognizes that they don't create nearly enough graduates per year. There are 20 of them in the country, and the demand for that product is very high. There are more than 20. There are 20 supported by the National Library of Medicine, and then there are several that are not supported by the National Library of Medicine as well. We're seeing informatics training in the health professional schools, so more and more lectures and experiences in informatics for medical students. Nursing has long been a leader in this area by having a lot of informatics training for nursing students. Pharmacy students, dental students, getting exposure to informatics. We've seen certificate programs for folks that don't want to go back to graduate school. Continuing education programs that are very popular at many of the professional meetings. You go to the American College of Physicians meeting, there's usually a whole track of informatics tutorials for practitioners. We've seen formal MD, PhD, and MD master's programs to try to encourage more people to do both and to be those kind of bridge people in medical schools. And fellowship programs and an attempt to create a board certification, which I'll tell you a bit more about later, okay? If you're going to get trained in this field, you got to get trained about both the methods, right, and about the application areas. And people that get trained in this field tend to get particularly expert in one of those four categories across the bottom. So someone will do, they'll be attracted to the field by clinical informatics, they'll want to work in clinical informatics, but in their education, they will learn about bioinformatics as well. And as I said, many people who work in clinical informatics are kind of simultaneously in public health informatics. They're highly interrelated. A curriculum to be ready for that? Well, you do need to know something about computing. And you need to know about the application domain. And if you don't already have medical or other health professional background, you're going to have to get some as part of the educational program. So the graduate programs I've been describing will take non-medically trained people, but then they have to teach them about the culture and activities, what goes on in medical schools, or in medical practice environments, excuse me, and about the public health environment. And the basic medical sciences, especially if you're going into bioinformatics, you got to learn a lot of genetics and molecular biology and so forth. Cognitive science, decision making, the decision sciences, bioengineering, especially these areas of overlap, smart devices, some imaging stuff, epidemiology, statistics, especially if you're doing public health work. Management science, if you want to go into leadership roles that involve management. A lot of our students want to go and take courses in business schools. It's very common, either for management or entrepreneurial reasons. So we need a textbook. We've had this book now since 1990. It's in its third edition. And it's the textbook for an introductory course in the field. And it covers all those areas, both the basic methods and the applied areas. It's 1,000 pages now because it's grown so much over the years. So if you're a PhD student in biomedical informatics, at least at any program I've been at, we don't let you get your degree unless you make a contribution at the top of the diagram. Okay. That's what it means to do a PhD in this field. You could write a wonderful program. You could write a whole new medical record system that works in your hospital. But if you can't describe what the new methods and new insights are in ways that others can capitalize on them, you haven't contributed to the science of the field, which is mandatory. So if you work in clinical informatics, you're trying to have an impact on clinical medicine. And you will drop on clinical medicine for your inspiration. And you'll see problems, and you'll say, I have to fix this. And you'd be surprised how many people enter this program because as house officers on the wards, they go nuts with what they see as inefficiencies in the way in which data are being managed or information is being provided to them. And they say, I've got to go and learn how to fix this. And they'll come in for that reason. Okay. And then they discover it's not that easy. There's no little off-the-shelf package that they can use to fix that problem. There are all these cultural and fiscal and workflow barriers to getting it done. And they realize this is a field that has substance, and they're going to have to learn and make contributions in it. And they may well have to draw upon significant technical methodologies in order to be able to do that. So at the top of the diagram, they may have to really learn a fair amount of computer science. And if they're really good, they may even make some contributions to computer science. And we do have examples of that. Our graduate students in biomedical informatics working on some clinical problem, have to solve a new problem in computer science, generalize what they've done, write papers in the computer science literature, and the computer science community is impressed by the method because they see its wide applicability. Okay. But it might be decision science and not computer science. Or it might be cognitive science. Increasingly, this cognitive area has become huge in this field. The information sciences, management sciences, and by the way, anything else that seems important to solve that problem. So we've seen recently some students getting into anthropology because of the role that that plays, and other social sciences such as that, organizational theory, industrial engineering. I could draw the same diagram for bioinformatics. It's not the discovery of the gene, which is the informatics contribution, although that new gene you discovered using a new method may be a wonderful contribution to biology. But it's the new method that's your contribution to informatics. And it may be a computer science or a decision science or statistical method. A lot of places you can go to get trained in this field. These are just some of them, but it gives you a sense of the number of places out there, both here and abroad. They're all over the world now. And this is a kind of a potpourri of the kind of things people do when they get out. Some of them stay in academic biomedical informatics, but not that many. Go to industry, go to work in public health settings, clinical settings, biotech, pharma, hospitals, hospital management, CMIO jobs, government jobs in the VA or the military hospitals. ONC has several graduates of these programs currently working there. There are other ways to get trained, as I indicated, these continuing education programs. There's a great course that the NLM sponsors at Woods Hole. It's offered twice a year. If you get in, they pay your way to go. It's a whole week long in a lovely setting. A lot of nice seafood to be eaten while you're there. If you don't know about that and want to look at it, That's the website. We have tutorials at the AMIA meetings to help people get into it, and then a whole series of what we're calling 10 by 10 courses that I'll say more about in a few minutes. These are online courses. They have some face-to-face time. You get certificates on completing most of them, although in a few cases they can contribute to graduate degree programs too. So to end this part of the talk is the creation of several new biomedical informatics departments or academic units, and every year there are new ones. And the CTSAs have made it even more likely because institutions are finding that they can't get funded under a CTSA unless they start to elevate informatics to an academic unit. And then they're trying to find people to hire to create them, and that's where they're really finding it challenging. Strong job market, as I mentioned. A reasonable government investment, although most people are complaining that it's been skewed too much towards the applied side and it's harder than it used to be to get funding for the more basic questions in this field. Increasing acceptance of the field as a valid subspecialty area by the professional societies. And interestingly, in the computer science community, for example, increasing recognition that medicine is a great application area to drive innovation in computer science. So we're seeing a willingness that never used to exist for computer science faculty to work on biomedical problems. And then all the political attention
in Washington of late.
Okay, so what's AMIA? I'll do this one pretty quickly.
AMIA wasn't actually founded until a period between 1988 and 1990, when several existing smaller organizations came together to create a single unified professional organization for the field of what was then called medical informatics, which is why the name is AMIA and not the Association of Biomedical Informatics, American Biomedical Informatics Association. But it inherited and then has continued a large annual meeting. A college of elected fellows. It continued the representation to the International Federation, IMEA. And it published, since the early 1990s, the Journal of the American Medical Informatics Association, or JAMIA, which is now not only the official journal of AMIA, but consistently ranked at the top of the journals in the field. Of course, it's received by everybody in the organization, and that helps. It has peer-reviewed papers about the science of our field. It only accepts something under a third of all submissions. It has reviews, discussion forums, and the like as well. So if you're not familiar with JAMIA, I saw there's stacks of them in the AMIA booth out in the exhibitor floor. You could go take a look at the journal and see the kind of stuff that gets published there. The members are very actively involved in the organization in general, and there are a series of working groups, some more active than others, but these are the, I think, a relatively recent up-to-date list of the working groups. And of course, I would emphasize that one of us is the Public Health Informatics Working Group within AMIA. Today, the organization is the professional home, as we call it, for biomedical and health informaticians. The members of AMIA and its college include most of the pioneers in this field and most of the young emerging authorities as well. It's about 4,000 members, and we have an amazing number of international members too, because they like our meeting. They come from all over the world to come to the national meeting in the U.S. And they like our journal, which is well-read internationally. Several of our members are sitting on the new ONC Health Policy and Health Standards Committee, for example. So it's very well represented in leadership roles in Washington as well. And we essentially embrace all the major training programs in the field. And we have an academic forum that the training programs tend to be members of. The Strategic Vision and Action Plan basically is described here. I won't go through it in any big detail other than to say that we have the big fall meeting, but there are several other meetings per year that AMIA puts on. So it's a convener of meetings on specialty topics.
its college gets together for a meeting annually. That's much smaller, obviously. There's a spring meeting, which tends to be smaller than the fall meeting and is more targeted, more applied, and it's had a track in public health informatics for the last several years, which has been very well attended. It's got a meeting of the academic forum, the programs that do the training, an annual invitational policy meeting now in its fifth year. Next one's coming up next week on the subject of unintended consequences of health IT technology and policy. And then the last few years, moving into the bioinformatics area with a meeting on translational bioinformatics held in San Francisco, which has grown very quickly and is filling a real niche. By translational bioinformatics, we mean bioinformatics with a focus on how it's going to affect human disease and treatment management eventually, but it's coming out of that basic science genomics world. So we cover, of the six potential topic areas here, five of the six. We've kind of decided not to try to be a major force in imaging informatics. There is an organization called the Society for Imaging Informatics in Medicine with which we have close relationships, and there are many people that are members both of that organization and ours, but they kind of have taken the ball on the imaging informatics side of the spectrum. But the rest of these areas we're now very active in, and the fastest growing area within AMIA right now is clinical research informatics, and I think the CTSAs have had a lot to do with that. So about 17%, the yellow on there, of our members say that their primary interest is public health informatics. But as you can see, clinical informatics dominates, and then we have about 10% in the bioinformatics end of the spectrum. About a third of our members have MD degrees. They're not all practicing. But other health professionals, nurses in particular, are very well represented as well. And there are two issues that I thought you might be interested in hearing about, and I chose to mention the development of the informatics curricula for health professional schools. This is trying to get informatics on the curriculum in medical schools and nursing schools more broadly. And then the fascinating achievement, I thought, and my predecessor Don Detmer gets the credit for this, of having AMIA elected to full membership in the Council of Medical Specialty Societies, which is basically all the medical specialty organizations. And AMIA is quite different from most of the other ones, because they usually are things like pediatrics or internal medicine or surgery or radiology or what have you. And now we're working towards the creation of a board exam and board certification. I'll tell you a little quickly about that. So we call the effort to get informatics into the curriculum of all the medical schools and other health professional schools our Common Interprofessional Informatics Curriculum Effort, CIIC. We've been doing this jointly with the Association of Academic Health Centers, which is also very interested in seeing this happen, but we've engaged many of the other professional leadership organizations like AAMC for medicine, and the Nursing Association, psychology, dental, and the like. And we're working to try to get funding to actually carry out curriculum development efforts so that the core curriculum that can be shared by all of those specialty areas and identifies what you really need to know as a physician. And let's face it, you don't need to know everything on my diagram to be a physician, but you need to know something about informatics given the world you're about to graduate and enter. The specialty society business, this is a big deal. We have actually got pretty good support for our proposal. Working with the American Board of Preventive Medicine, that there actually be subspecialty boards in clinical informatics for physicians who want to be able to get certified for competence in that area. To do that, you have to submit a big application to the American Board of Medical Specialties that approves all the board exams and the subspecialty certifications that occur. So the American Board of Preventive Medicine, which gives the preventive medicine boards, has agreed to sponsor our application, and this will be the only subspecialty board in medicine that you can take regardless of what your primary specialty is. And if you think about it, it's totally logical given the nature of informatics, but for them it's been a bit of a mind-boggling notion, is that you should be able to get subspecialty boards. You know, normally, just for those of you that don't understand, If you get your boards in internal medicine, you can then do your subspecialty boards in cardiology, okay, which is a subspecialty of internal medicine. What we're saying is if you get internal medicine, pediatrics, radiology, surgery, any of them, you can get subspecialty boards in clinical informatics. Because there are people in all those areas that work in this field. It means we would have to have an ACGME accreditation process for the fellowships that would need to get introduced. There's a lot of work still to be done. It's quite complex, but we're making progress, and I think it's enough far along the way that it's okay to talk about it now. The 10x10 programs are these training programs that some of you have heard about because we've actually had a relationship with CDC to try to provide public health informatics training from these programs. Several currently exist. The public health informatics specialty program begins this fall, being offered by the University of Utah. There's a brand new nursing informatics program as well. And there are other ones in the works. We're always looking for ideas for other programs and proposals. We pay a lot of attention to what's happening in Washington and try to contribute. Recently, this has become a major part of what AMIA does. We have an annual Hill Day when people go on the Hill. And what I found impressive as I got more involved with AMIA at the leadership level was the incredibly positive reputation AMIA has on the Hill. We aren't viewed as coming in out of self-interest. I mean, I think they've come to appreciate that when AMIA comes in, they want to talk about informatics and health IT in the context of what can we do to be the best thing possible for patients. Coming as we are without any commercial message, that's been well received. Many collaborative relationships, I won't read off all of them, but you'll see CDC there under the list of government agencies. And I just want to make sure people know that this year's fall meeting is in San Francisco. It's November 14th to 18th at the Hilton. And then we are adding to our Translational Bioinformatics Summit next March, again by coincidence in San Francisco, a second shorter clinical research informatics meeting so that we're covering translational science from both the bioinformatics and then the clinical research informatics side in a four-day set of meetings. I'm not going to get down to my fourth bullet, but I do think I should say something explicit about AMIA and public health and the relationship with CDC. So I'll close with that. It'll just take a couple of minutes. We got involved in this field when we held here in Atlanta one of our spring meetings back in 2001 under the direction of Bill Yasnov, a special spring congress purely on the subject of public health informatics. Perhaps some of you attended. It was well attended, and it resulted in a bunch of recommendations that are written up in an article in JAMIA that I've cited at the bottom of that slide. And among the many recommendations that were created during that meeting were these two that I've highlighted. All stakeholders need to be engaged in coordinated activities related to public health information architecture, standards, confidentiality, best practice, and research. And informatics training is needed throughout the public health workforce. Now, if we take this little picture that I showed you before, the Holy Grail picture, where does public health fit in? Well, it kind of fits in all over, doesn't it? But if you think about it, and I shouldn't even just limit it to regional and national registries, but the notion that you're collecting the information of what's going on out there in the practice world and the care world, and for that matter, in the purchasing habits of consumers and all the other ways you try to collect data, you're trying to then feed that back into drawing inferences and conclusions that can help contribute to the standards for prevention and treatment, the creation of educational materials and protocols, and when there's something really emergent going on, as there is now with H1N1, trying to get right into the decision support category. So public health is a real natural participant in this long-standing notion of what the cycle is that we're trying to achieve. Now, this book came out in 2003, again from the Institute of Medicine and the National Academies Press. Who Will Keep the Public Healthy? Many of you may be familiar with this book. You can get it on the National Academies Press website. But it is filled with recommendations about the future of public health and the public health workforce, in which informatics, as per this quotation I've put on this slide, is highlighted.
To try to help create more people expert in public health informatics, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation got very intrigued with this earlier in this decade and created additional training slots in the NLM program for master's and PhD students who would focus solely on public health applications of informatics. And the four programs that got these slots are four that have very active public health programs and public health schools that they collaborated with: Columbia, Johns Hopkins, University of Utah, and the University of Washington. Many of us are saying now that the Robert Wood Johnson stimulus is over, we'd really love to see CDC pick this up. This is an area where we believe CDC has tremendous potential benefit if they were to contribute slots at the in the NLM programs. And since late 2007, at about the time of the creation of the National Center for Public Health Informatics at CDC, we've had, which by the way delighted us at the time and we worked to see that happen, we've had several goals that are outlined here in our relationship with CDC. And one of our goals is to help strengthen informatics at CDC in any way we can, and we remain open to any and all such requests and recommendations. We are already involved with a cooperative agreement with CDC to increase the number of state and local public health officers who can get training through our 10x10 program on informatics. We've got global health efforts that are in the public health arena. Support from the Rockefeller Foundation, initially with an emphasis on international health, but the concept really generalizes more broadly, where we're trying to develop component courses, so-called building blocks, which could be pieced together into curricula and try to provide an online delivery of a lecture or a tutorial-length topic custom tailored for the audience. And there's a particular interest in the Rockefeller Foundation in doing this for Sub-Saharan Africa, which is our initial focus. But the concept totally generalizes to other parts of the world and even domestically. We're working out issues of IP and distribution, intellectual property, that is, distribution challenges and some of the infrastructure questions. The notion is that much of this would be self-directed, would be mostly online, but there would be supportive mechanisms in place as well. There are language issues, maybe not in the universities so much, to the extent that these would be for university students, but certainly in the health clinics in Sub-Saharan Africa, you can't make the same assumptions about English, and so that adds complexity to this. We're really trying to make sure that local people get trained who then do the local training of those individuals. We also have something called our Global Partnership Program, which is supported by the Gates Foundation and is aimed at trying to, again in Sub-Saharan Africa, initially foster local e-health capacity through relationships between other, shall we say, advanced programs in informatics in other parts of the world and academic institutions and clinical settings in the resource-deprived parts of the world to try to help them develop the competence to do their own electronic health record implementations and to continue to grow their own workforce without needing U.S. intervention eventually. I'm not going to have time to go down this, but there are a whole series of objectives associated with this project that will be in the slide set, which is freely available after the talk. There's also an effort by IMEA to develop a traveler's health template, basically a traveler's medical record data set that would make international travel more easy for individuals who take ill abroad. This is relatively young activity, but it's getting going, and it is a nice way to show how IMEA can bring together the international community to try to jointly solve a problem that has clear international implications. Oh, let me skip through this. This is just the story of what happened in this last 8 months or so, and the stimulus bill and ARRA eventually passing and the implications for HIT. AMIA was very involved in encouraging
that evolution. And the key, of course, now is to try to understand what's coming out of the Office of the National Coordinator. I think most of you know David Blumenthal is the new head of the office at ONC. He was actually at the AME meeting last fall before he knew he was going to get that job,
because he'd been very involved in the Obama campaign as a supporter, as an advisor on the Obama health policy activities.
So, an optimistic perspective that recently came out of the White House, or out of HHS, I guess, spokesperson cited a Congressional Budget Office estimate that 90% of doctors, thanks to ARA, would be using health IT by 2019 in their practices, thanks to this stimulus bill. And I think we could close by asking two questions. Will there be meaningful use in 2019, or will people just have computers in their offices collecting dust?
And if it is meaningful, what will be the implications for our public health infrastructure and health promotion if that percentage of the nation's physicians are literally contributing in that cycle back into the registry and database process? So those are the things I wanted to say today, and I think we still have a little bit of time left so we could have some discussion. Thank you.
Hi. Oh, so I'm going to repeat the question so it's on the tape. I believe what you asked is whether or not the subspecialty certification that I described would include public health instead of or in addition to clinical informatics. Well, remember I mentioned that the sponsoring board is the American Board of Preventive Medicine. They are very concerned to make sure that any subspecialty exam is actually, even if it's called clinical informatics, is really that health informatics union between clinical and public health. So it is intended that the required curriculum and the ACGME accreditation process would require public health to be a major part of that training and the skill set that people would be competent in if they were boarded, okay? So it's the problems with terminology again. It was being called clinical informatics for so long that people went along with it. You might argue under my other definitions, my earlier slide, if you called it health informatics, it would include the two, and maybe it could evolve in that direction. We'll see what happens. Let me add another point, which is, because I thought that might be what you were going to ask, is what if I'm not a physician, but I want to get certified in clinical informatics or public health informatics through a similar kind of board exam? And we're hearing that from a lot of people, and I think it's AMIA's responsibility to make sure that we do address the issue of interprofessional certification in that area. And so we are working on that as well. It's just that there was a well-established process for trying to get a foot in the door in the medical environment with physicians. But we are definitely going to be interested, as time allows, to quickly move into those other areas as well. Yes.
Thanks for the informative lecture. Quick question. I see that you're emphasizing computer science support to biomedical informatics. Where is the information engineering in that? Is that purposely omitted there? Scientists don't tend to be good engineers, so to speak, and there's quite a bit of emergence of information engineering.
So the question was, here we're getting into terminology issues again. It's like clinical, does it include public health? The question is whether or not information engineering is part of the emphasis, if you will, of what informatics graduate students or others who learn about informatics need to know. And I would say, of course. You know, we may not be using that name, but there's a kind of practical aspect to being trained in biomedical informatics because of the applications orientation that's so intense and the project management and eventual applied aspects of the work that necessitates that you skew the training a bit in those directions in ways that mean that your graduate students are not learning some of the things they would if they were a computer science graduate student. So for example, we don't require our graduate students to take mathematical theory of computation, which every graduate student in computer science has to take, or assembly language programming. All right, I mean, there are many things like that. So don't just assume that they're just learning, you know, traditional computer science. In a good program, those kinds of sensitivities to the engineering aspects have to be part of the way in which it's taught. I agree with you.
I apologize if you've addressed this, but I've met you late. Have you worked at all with, let's say, Navy postgraduate school in terms, because I know they have some informatics and have been looking at traditionally for service members, distance learning?
Some branches of the military have been very involved with the educational programs around the country, not so much directly with AMIA as with some of our member organizations in the Academic Forum. So for many years, for example, the Special Forum, I used to be at Stanford. When I was at Stanford, we had a large Army contingent that came and took our courses, being sent mostly by the Army hospitals and the like. But I know that the Navy has been very interested in and involved as well, but I can't remember if any of them have joined our Academic Forum. It would be a logical thing for the Navy postgraduate school to join the Academic Forum, because we bring those people together to discuss these informatics education issues and to collaborate. Yes.
I did so for public health research, and that's you get a group of public health scholars together, very broad church, but if you get them together, they'll see biomedical as distinct from behavioral, social, legal, all sorts of points of intervention that are not biomedical but are very important levers in public health, particularly as we look into the affordability of healthcare systems, moving care upstream to earlier points in the natural history of disorders, getting more citizen driven consumer health. Particularly think about the international set.
So the question was, mightn't biohealth informatics be a better term given the public health emphasis? So let me try to put this in context, because I think it will explain what's happening in the U.S. a bit, and there may be some differences here. The academic programs in the U.S. have been fighting what I would call a centrifugal force that is trying to pull bioinformatics away from the rest of the field. There are many bioinformatics departments and training programs in universities that have none of the other kinds of informatics, okay? And they largely are what I would call computational biology programs, but they're using the name bioinformatics. One of the things that many of the academic programs in biomedical informatics have therefore wanted to do is to have relatively balanced representation on their faculty of those four categories. Okay. Bioinformatics faculty, right besides clinical informatics faculty, collaborating in some cases, and public health faculty. Okay. As a chair of such a department, it didn't take me very long at all to realize that I was going to have trouble recruiting good bioinformatics faculty members in a department called medical informatics or anything that had health in the title, okay? Just the realities of that world. Biomedical was the first term we found that actually let the bio people be happy and the public health people be happy, okay? So at least here, that's the reason I believe that we've begun to see biomedical being used as the preferred adjective. And many programs in either medical or health informatics have actually changed their names formally recently to biomedical. So it's I think that trend is very, very much underway. Now, having said that, when I go abroad, I don't see very many departments that are trying to include bioinformatics with the rest of their health informatics activities. I think that this may be an unusual American phenomenon, where we're really trying to keep it all together. I believe it's actually one field, as I said. It's one field in terms of the methodologies. Data mining in a big genetic database is no different from data mining in a big population database. The methods are very comparable. So if you want to keep them together, you need a name that everybody can live with. And I don't think biohealth would do it in the US, but it may not be as important in the UK if you don't have any bioinformatics people in your department or your unit.
We have a third of them are bioinformaticians.
And they don't care about the biohealth title?
They like the biohealth title.
How funny. Well, I guess we need to have a kumbaya session with your bioinformatics people and mine. That's funny. Okay.
In your opinion, from your perspective, I wonder if you could comment what you think are the biggest current gaps in public health informatics, and where over the next 5 years you think there are opportunities for innovation in that area.
Well, there's a nice, easy question. The question was, where are the biggest gaps in public health informatics? Where are the biggest opportunities for innovation? Having heard the opening session today, I would say the biggest challenge for public health informatics is an increased recognition that informatics is not a tool alone. It can be a tool, but the fundamental issues that need to be addressed in order to bring the technology to bear in the public health world will never be addressed if CDC thinks it's just a tool. CDC does support research in other areas, right? But has not yet embraced the notion that informatics is an area that needs a public health focused research program as well. So they've left it basically to NIH. And that's why I made the point that I did about how important it was to introduce slots that are public health oriented into the NLM training program, not by relying on a foundation, but by having the same federal government in a different branch contribute to that sees the need for public health trained master's and PhD students. The big challenges for public health are the same ones for all. It's closing that loop in my circle diagram. Okay? And there are some special challenges for the public health community. I made a point that one of the challenges that we have in the medical world is that the medical system in the U.S. is so fragmented, right? And it's clearly true. Just go visit Hong Kong sometime and see how they've been able to do a Hong Kong-wide healthcare system with great IT support for it, because it's all one system. And we don't have that luxury, and we probably never will, and therefore we're always struggling to how to piece it together from a very fragmented system. You could say the same thing about the public health infrastructure in the country. Every regional and state government, they're all here, but they're all separately run and designed and done differently, and making them all work together in a consistent, coherent way so that you can really share and pull the data is not that different from the challenges we have in trying to share clinical data for purely clinical purposes across institutions and the like. So it seems to me getting the public health community fully engaged in discussions about the standards evolution and researching that in that area and really thinking about some of these cognitive issues that have a big impact on whether or not a public health worker in a small town is going to use the systems that you provide them, or find them just overbearing or taking too much time or all the other things that can keep a system from being successful. So I think almost every area is a potential area for good research and innovation in public health informatics in much the same way that it is in the clinical world. I got a feeling that might fall on deaf ears, but we'll see. So you're talking about the health applications that Google and Microsoft have, the Health Vault and so forth? Yes, Google Health and Health Vault. So this is what we call consumer health informatics. This is definitely a public health issue, I think, and therefore you can say this is right at that intersection between clinical informatics and public health informatics. It has to do with creating an informed populace that knows how to use intelligent specifically those kinds of resources, and then making sure that people are adequately protected, and so that you leverage them for good and try to control the potential downsides of them. And there are some potential pitfalls, obviously, with that kind of non-healthcare provider data sets, even if they are nominally controlled by the individuals. But I think I think patient empowerment has been part of the mantra of the last 10 or 15 years, and these are part of how that could be enhanced. And we'll have to see to what extent these really take off with the public, because of the number of users is still pretty small.
I want to thank you, Dr. Okay. Shortlist, mm-hmm. for the presentation, and I want to thank you for participating, and I just need to remind you of a few things. If you want continuing education credits, you need to complete the session evaluation forms, and everybody's